The House now comes to oral questions. Question number one is in the name of the Honourable Paula Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Does she stand by all her statements and actions?
The Honourable Kelvin
Dunn. Mr. Speaker, I want to speak on behalf of the Prime Minister. Yes, she is committed to that. The history of New Zealand will be taught in schools, in all schools, and we listen to what the Motu was saying, that we inform our young people of the history of New Zealand, so it's now in the curriculum of New Zealand, and the history will be taught, and it will be in every school.
Supplementary, does she still stand by her statement that the first she knew of the sexual assault allegations against her staff member was when the spin-off ran an article on it on Monday, despite the fact that she was asked about those allegations by the media 5 weeks ago?
The Prime Minister stands by all her words, all her statements.
Supplementary, does she believe in a victim-led response involving specialists in dealing with sexual abuse to help with the sort of situations involving her staff member?
Aye.
Should she be calling in specialist services to help with the process that's been handled so badly so far?
Order. Order. The member has just reflected on me. She will ask her question without the reflection.
Will she be calling in specialist services to help with the situations that are currently happening and making sure that the process is better than it has been previously?
A point of order, the Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has no responsibility for the question that Paula Bennett has just asked.
Well, there's no responsibility for the answer, I think the member means. Paula Bennett, further question.
I'm not sure what that means. Can she state in the House today that she will ensure that a victim-led response will happen when there are incidences of sexual assault?
Here a te Premier, kia tautoko ngia rātou kua tūkino ai, kua whakapai, kua tūkino ai.
Order. I'm going to ask the Minister to start his answer again for... I don't think any of the members are... I want to make it clear to the House that because of the late night and the fact that some of us didn't get home last night, there's one set of hearing aids that never got their charge. But I think all members are suffering from a hearing problem at the moment through the lack of interpretation, so I'm therefore going to ask the Honourable Kelvin Davis to start the answer on behalf of the Prime Minister again.
It is the desire of the Minister that we support those who have been abused.
Has she asked senior staff in her office why they did not inform her of the various serious allegations around her staff member?
Mr. Speaker, this issue is for the party to sort out.
Does she agree with the statement of the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, the Honourable Kelvin Davis, who stated in the House yesterday that these allegations were all based on rumour?
Mr. Speaker, the translations of those words, they're a little bit mixed up because the Māori words, there was only one meaning for some of the words, like the word whakapai or the word kohimuhum.
A point of order, the Honourable Paula Bennett.
I'm sorry, I think maybe it was the translation then as well, was quite unclear. And I just ask if we could perhaps even have the translation again so that I just understand for a follow-up question.
Speaking to the point
of order. So I can provide some direction, just because you hear rumours.
Order! Who interjected then? Stand, withdraw and apologise.
Apologise. Point of order.
No, I'm hearing one.
Sir, this is the week of Te Reo Māori, and just because you hear the word accusation and rumour, it doesn't mean it's a fact.
Well, that was Mr. Jones, most unhelpful, and I think almost certainly designed to cause disruption. He will stand, withdraw and apologise. It was not a point of order, and the member has... I know he doesn't pay close attention to these things, but he's been here long enough to know that that was not a point of order. He will stand, withdraw and apologise.
Withdraw and apologise.
I'm going to ask Paula Bennett to ask her question again.
My question was, does she agree with the statement of the Deputy Leader of the Labor Party, the Honourable Calvin Davis, who stated in the House yesterday that these allegations were all based on rumour?
No, before the member answers that question, the problem that I have is that I have the translation of what Mr. Davis said. I have a translation of what Mr. Davis said, he did use, or what has been translated for me is the word rumour, but it applied to the member's party and not to the comments that the member made about the issue which this member is now asking about.
Sir, but I, point of order, I too have looked very carefully at the transcript or else wouldn't be making this statement. And I'm sorry, I interpret it quite differently, that it is quite clear he was stating that I was making allegations in the speech previous to him that were based on rumour.
Well, it's clear that we have a translation issue. I'm going to let the Prime Minister answer, but with the advantage of probably some extra ability to translate. But I do want to make clear to the Honourable Paula Bennett that the translation that I have, the only time the word rumour occurs in it, does not relate to it relates to matters of last year.
Mr. Speaker, this is the problem, the difference of, between the translation and the interpretation of the words.
Can the Prime Minister ask Calvin Davis then what he meant when he made statements in this House in Māori yesterday that quite clearly were objectifying and saying that it was allegations of rumour?
Ka kite anō ahau I a Calvin Davis māku.
When I see Calvin Davis, I'll ask him.
Does she think that it's appropriate to make fun of the fact that there are such serious allegations going on at the moment and such chaos and disarray by senior members of this House?
No. No, the member will ask a question that's within, if she wants to, that is within the standing orders.
Does she still stand by her statement that victims should go to one of the line managers and that no senior people in her office had received a complaint?
Aye.
Yes.
Is she stating then that the victims are not telling the truth?
Carl.
No.
Then how does the answer to both those questions add up when the victims have absolutely stated that they made a complaint to one of her senior managers?
The reason is because my responses are right. They're correct.
Does she still stand by her statement that no victims have gone to any senior staff within the Prime Minister's office or the Leader's office to make complaints around an alleged offender?
The Prime Minister will stand by all her words.
That's question number two, Clayton Mitchell.
Mr Speaker.
Sorry, a point of order.
I'm sorry if I don't have hearing aids, but I got no translation.
Well,
is that me? Is that just me?
I think it's just you in this case. I did. I'll tell you what the interpreter said. The Prime Minister will stand by all her words.
Mr Speaker.
Clayton Mitchell.
My question is to the Minister for Regional Economic Development and ask what recent progress has been made on Provincial Growth Fund projects?
The Honourable Shane Jones.
Mr Speaker, last week I engaged in some fiscal DIY. On behalf of the Crown, had the pleasure to go to one of the busiest wharves in Taitokero in Aotearoa, Kororareka, the Russell Wharf, where after I had applied a paintbrush, there was a positive fiscal glow to that part of New Zealand.
What other projects are nearing completion in the Bay of Islands?
The economic heart of the Northland area is beating rapidly in anticipation of more good news, both this year and next year, which will not come in the form of a white elephant. The Russell Wharf funding announced, along with Opua and Paihia, shows that we believe in our communities who want to create new opportunities for economic growth, community participation, and ensure that the infrastructure is future-proofed via the Provincial Growth Fund, not for the big end of town, but for the garden variety Kiwis who coincidentally and happily live in the north.
What progress has been seen on PGF projects in Taranaki?
Mr Speaker, to dispel rather cruel rumours that there is a very strong northern focus to the fiscal glow, recently I was in Taranaki upon the Maunga, although in Taranaki it is called the Maunga, although that word in my tribe means a large piece of firewood. I am pleased to say that the feasibility study was very positive and a sum of $13.3 million has been allocated to upgrade the infrastructure, involve the local iwi and ensure that Taranaki Maunga represents a new set of opportunities for jobs, for tourism growth, for export earnings as foreigners come to New Zealand and spend money and enjoy an area that is feeling the positive attention of this government, i.e. the Taranaki region.
My question is to the Minister for Women. Does she believe all women in New Zealand should feel safe from sexual and physical violence in the workplace?
The Honourable Jenny Angeta.
Tēnā koe, Mr Speaker. Yes.
Thank you, Mr Speaker.
Does she agree that women in position that sorry, does she agree that people in positions of power who encourage women in the workplace to stay silent and not go to the police when they allege they have been victims of sexual assault do more harm to the victims?
Yes.
Is it the responsibility of line managers and senior staff who get told of instances of sexual harassment to report that to her central aid registry that now collects data on sexual harassment in the workplace?
Mr Speaker, I do think that it is important that whatever, if it is the wishes of the complainants in the case, that that should be reported to the relevant manager, yes.
Does she believe men in a position of power conducting a witch hunt to find out who it was that might, for instance, have spoken to the media make women feel safe from sexual and physical violence in the workplace?
Mr. Speaker, what I can say is bullying, sexual harassment, sexual assault are all very serious problems right across society. No institution is immune from them. The Francis Review has shown that in Parliament, and we all have a responsibility to make sure that women are safe and that there are victim-centred inquiries into these matters. What does she consider a victim-centred response to be? Mr. Speaker, I think that there are best practice examples, but ultimately the wishes of the complainants must be taken into account in the way in which the process is undertaken.
Has she had any concerns about sexual assault allegations by people employed in Parliament of late?
Mr. Speaker, I always have concerns about any reported cases of sexual assault or sexual harassment in Parliament. I've had no specific knowledge or personal knowledge of any of those complaints.
Question number four, Maya Lubick.
Tēnā koe e te mana whakawa.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
My question is to the Minister of Education and asks, what actions is the government taking to reduce costs for families in the public education system?
Mr. Speaker, the government is implementing a school donation scheme for decile 1 to 7 schools. This means that as of the 1st of January next year, up to 1,700 schools will receive funding of $150 per student so that they can stop directly asking parents for money or charge for anything associated with the delivery of the curriculum. We know how difficult it is for parents to afford the donations that schools request and the pressure that it places on parents who aren't able to afford them. The government is taking the pressure off families and putting the free back into our public education system.
Parliamentary. Yes. What advice is available to parents so that they know what can and cannot be charged to them in public schooling?
Mr. Speaker, last week we released guidance for families on the Ministry of Education's website to help them understand what they can be asked to pay for in schools. An example of this would be an optional after-school swimming activity or school uniforms. Also importantly, the guidance also provides clarity to families as to what is a voluntary donation and frequently used examples of these. We've also published requirements for boards of trustees of the decile 1 to 7 schools who are eligible for the scheme about what they can and cannot seek in the way of donations if they decide to opt into the scheme.
Parliamentary. What action is the government taking to ensure that schools do not continue to ask parents for donations if they accept funding as part of the school donation scheme?
Mr. Speaker, the legislation that's currently going through the House means that eligible schools who have accepted the funding from the government but then continue to unlawfully seek voluntary donations from parents can have that money recovered from them. It's important that we protect the integrity of the scheme and make sure that the funding is doing exactly what it is meant to achieve.
What other funding has the government delivered to remove costs from public schooling?
Mr. Speaker, as part of this year's budget, the government scrapped fees for NCEA. More than 168,000 secondary school students will no longer have to pay fees in order to have their qualifications awarded. On top of this, 150,000 current and former students with unpaid NCEA fees will now be formally awarded their NCEA credits or qualifications. We're removing financial barriers to our public education system to make sure that all young people have the same chance to succeed.
Yeah. Question number five, the Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Does he stand by all the statements, policies and actions?
The Honourable Grant Robertson.
I, in the context in which they were given, made and undertaken.
What changes is he proposing to bank regulations following the Reserve Bank and FMA's conduct and culture review into that sector?
I'm going to ask the member to ask a question again to relate it to the primary.
What policies has he changed in relation to bank regulations following the Reserve Bank and FMA's conduct and culture review into that sector?
Mr. Speaker, announcements about that are forthcoming.
Does he expect higher standards of conduct from bank executives and a better culture?
Mr. Speaker, indeed, I do believe that we are in an environment now where there's been a focus on the conduct of bank executives and indeed the governors of banks as well, and that the expectation of the public is that their conduct needs to be exemplary. And as part of the review of Phase 2 of the Reserve Bank Act, we are looking at the standards that have been brought in around executive accountability in Australia as to whether they can be applied in New Zealand.
Does he agree with the Reserve Bank Governor's comments? Quote, culture comes from the top, and boards and senior managers at our financial institutions need to be leading by example.
Mr. Speaker, I find myself agreeing with the Reserve Bank Governor on a number of occasions, and I think that there are many banks in New Zealand. There are many banks in New Zealand that could look at the culture and the conduct at the top and make sure that they meet the standards New Zealanders would expect.
Is he happy with the standards of conduct demonstrated by his government, and does he think his government has a good culture?
As the Minister of Finance, Mr. Speaker, I believe that this is a government that is doing great things for New Zealand and for the New Zealand economy. I believe that it is a government that listens to New Zealanders. And I note today that the Minister responsible for the Earthquake Commission went and visited some of the people who are struggling with decisions that have been made in the past by agencies like Southern Response. First time I believe a minister has actually gone and done that kind of thing. That is the kind of culture and conduct that I think a government should be proud of.
What do you expect senior figures in any industry to react promptly if they were aware of claims of serious misconduct?
Speaker, yes.
Then why did he say nothing when he knew about serious misconduct
order
in his government?
Order. Order. Member will resume his seat.
Well, the member knows that's out of order. He absolutely knows it's out of order. A point of order, the Honourable
Mr. Speaker, I hesitate to do this, but you have been very strict on this side of the House when questions have been misused in terms of your allocation process that you operate, and I just wonder whether that's going to apply in this case.
Yeah, and the member, I'll say to the member that what I've said to other members, I make those decisions, and giving me advice to do something tends to head me in the contrary direction. So the member might have just caused disadvantage for his own team. Question number six, Kiritapu Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question goes to the Minister of the Environment. What is the Crown doing to look after the Korepurepo?
What actions is the government taking to protect streams and wetlands?
The Honourable David Parker.
Mr. Speaker, last week the government announced our action plan for healthy waterways. It focused on three things. Firstly, stopping the degradation of our rivers. Secondly, delivering a noticeable improvement in water quality in 5 years. And third, restoring our waterways to a healthy state within a generation. We're currently consulting with the public on our proposed changes. Meetings are well attended, partly because consultation on other NPSs like the protection of elite soils and urban development and hazardous substances are taking place at the same meetings as was requested by the sectors.
Supplementary question. What is the response to the...
What has been the early feedback on the government's proposals?
There has been considerable positive comment on the government's plan to clean up our waterways. Across agriculture and environment sectors, there is a consensus that more needs to be done, and most New Zealanders are pleased this government is doing it. After some of the incendiary comments early after the release of the document, some attendees are concerned that the consultation on, for example, nitrate limits be open and genuine, and I can confirm that it is.
Supplementary question,
sir. Are the proposed levels of nitrate reduction fixed and uniform across the country?
Mr. Speaker, no, not necessarily. As our discussion document clearly states, we're consulting on whether the nutrient table should vary by water body. For example, should there be a different nitrate level for lowland streams in Canterbury compared with higher country rivers and lakes?
Supplementary, further supplementary question. Will the return respond to
Māori? Do the essential freshwater proposals return New Zealand to pristine or pure waterways, and what is the timeframe to achieve nitrate pollution limits?
Mr. Speaker, no, these standards don't mean waterways should be pristine in the way they were before we had cities and farms. We do, though, want rivers to be swimmable and to sustain a healthy ecosystem. In terms of timeframes, in contrast to the mistaken views of some, whatever the new nitrogen targets are in the MPS, they're not to be met by 2025. In fact, that is the date plans to start moving towards the target must be in place by. It is up to regional councils to set the pace of change to achieve that over a generation, that is, over some decades after 2025.
Have they read the bill?
Question number 7, the Honourable Scott Simpson.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister for the Environment. What is his response to the initial economic advisory report on the essential freshwater package, which says, quote, the cost effectiveness of policies targeting nutrients is likely to be questionable, unquote, and that under bottom lines for nutrients he has proposed, the area allocated to dry stock farming in the Waikato Waipa catchment is likely to fall by 68%.
Mr. Speaker, firstly, the quote is taken out of context because the statement in the document is made in respect of only, or the statement that he refers to is asserts that it's made only in respect of macro invertebrate health, whereas the scientific advisory group recommended the nitrogen attribute because the current MPS does not protect wider ecosystem health. However, I would respond in respect of the question that the interim report, or the initial report, is interim, not final. It's from LGNZ, and the modelling includes costs that were required to be made under the previous government policy but have not been put in place. It also assumes that a single NPS nitrogen attribute applies across the whole of the country and does not vary by region. It also assumes that immediate change in land use practices is required, whereas phasing in of policies, sometimes over decades, is an important part of the design of the freshwater package because, of course, it spreads the cost of implementation over time. Finally, I would note in the past week, misinformation claiming that the proposed changes to farming practices and land use need to be in place by 2025 are incorrect, and this is perhaps why he has misunderstood the report.
When will his government's economic modelling be available so that the public can judge for themselves the robustness of the local government New Zealand's findings?
Mr. Speaker, there's already, as I think I said the other day in the House, some 20 pages of economic analysis in the report. There will be further economic analysis once final decisions are taken as to the nitrogen attribute. I would note that Patrick Smalley, in a piece in today's Herald, said that at $100 million a year, which is what he totes up the cost, these costs represent less than 1% of the roughly $12 billion of raw agricultural output that Statistics New Zealand measures annually.
Does he agree with the authors that there is little evidence of a strong correlation between nitrogen and phosphorus and microinvertebrate levels?
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, would that question be re-asked? I didn't catch it.
Does he agree with the authors that there is little evidence of a strong correlation between nitrogen and phosphorus and microinvertebrate levels?
Mr. Speaker, that was the point that I made at the first point when I said that the quote had been taken out of context, because the scientific advisory group do not recommend a nitrate level on the basis of macroinvertebrates alone. They say it's necessary for ecosystem health more broadly.
How is he going to respond to the author's strong recommendation that an evaluation be undertaken of the entire package of policies proposed at both an industry and regional level?
Mr. Speaker, more economic analysis will be done, and indeed, after I received that report, that initial report some time ago, it's one of the reasons why we are explicit that we're consulting upon variation of nitrogen attributes rather than automatically assuming that it's across the whole of the country, as the costing in that initial report does.
Todd Miller. To the Minister, does he think good faith consultation on his fresh water plan is occurring today in Winton when you have 150 people sitting outside, 396 farmers having to put their apologies in because they're lambing and calving? Is this good faith negotiation and consultation?
Mr. Speaker, after the strong interest that was shown at meetings yesterday where everyone was able to be accommodated, there was an awareness amongst officials that there may not be sufficient space in the hall to which the member refers. A Facebook message was put out to locals last night noting that, offering to hold two meetings and suggesting that they spread across that other meeting date. Officials will go back to meet that need.
Will he extend the consultation period beyond 6 weeks and provide an opportunity for Rural New Zealand to engage on proposals that could fundamentally change New Zealand rural life?
Mr. Speaker, the 6 week consultation period is similar to the consultation period that we use for submissions to select committees, so we're not proposing to extend that date. We, however, have said, as select committees normally do, if people are a bit late with their submissions, we will still receive them.
To the Minister, what other areas of New Zealand primary production have to respond when environmental limits are breached?
Mr. Speaker, it's interesting, isn't it, that in the fisheries area, where environmental sustainability limits are breached, systems have to change to bring the fishing industry within the ambit of what is sustainable. There is nothing different really being proposed in respect of this policy.
Question number... the Honourable Nanaimo Huka.
Does the Minister believe that both urban communities and rural communities will need to contribute to make a difference to improve freshwater quality?
Good question.
Mr. Speaker, yes, and this package is balanced in that regard and expects improvements of both city dwellers and rural areas. Indeed, it's quite hard for officials sometimes to get the balance right. Officials in earlier rounds of consultation were criticised by non-urban populations of not highlighting enough the challenges that are to be met in urban areas. This time, in order to meet that expressed desire of rural populations, they have explained well what is being required of urban populations, and then there has been some frustration expressed at some of those meetings that they're focusing too much on urban issues and not enough on the rural.
Question number 8, Dr. Shane Ritty.
Kia ora, Mr. Speaker. To the Associate Minister of Health, does she stand by all her statements, policies and actions regarding vaccination in the measles outbreak?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary. Can she confirm the report on the Northern Advocate front page this morning that, quote, general medical practices in Northland have run out of measles vaccine, making tens of thousands of people vulnerable, unquote?
No. Ask a question that relates to the primary.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. The primary talks about the measles outbreak and vaccinations.
Yes. Just say measles outbreak. The substance of the question is, does she stand by all her statements, policies and actions? So the member has to relate his supplementary to that. Just having the word measles in it isn't good enough.
Okay, can she confirm the report on the Northern Advocate front page this morning, quote, that general medical practices in Northland had run out of measles vaccine, making tens of thousands of people vulnerable?
No. That none of those relate to a statement, action of the minister or a policy of the minister. You've got to, it's not hard to get the question right. The member is intellectually capable of doing it. I just wanted to have another crack.
Point of order. Point of order. Mr. Speaker, if we are going to get into the semantics of it, the question asks very clearly, does she stand by all her statements, policies and actions regarding vaccination and measles outbreak? We've heard twice this week in the House from health ministers that there's no problem with vaccinations. So when you have a headline in a local newspaper that completely disputes that, how can it be out of order in line with this question to ask if the statement is still being agreed with?
I just wanted to say to the member, if ministers had said that, which I don't accept, then I'm sure that the Dr. Retty would be capable of relating that statement in his question or a supplementary. He hasn't.
How do her policies align with the report on the Northern Advocate front page this morning that, quote, general medical practices in Northland have run out of measles vaccine, making tens of thousands of people vulnerable, unquote?
That's not quite there, but close enough.
Mr. Speaker, I've been advised today that the regional store was able to fill all MMR orders that have been placed by GPs in Northland and that stock of MMR is still available in the regional store. I have been assured by the Director General of Health that there's no supply issue when it comes to vaccines for managing the outbreak in Auckland, as well as ensuring that we can maintain the childhood immunization schedule across the country. What happened on Monday was that there was a stock take undertaken because there's been unprecedented demand for an administration of vaccines in the past 2 weeks. And what that revealed is while there's no supply issue, there was a distribution issue. And so the Ministry of Health, alongside local medical officers of health, local PHOs, and the DHB, are actively ensuring that there is sufficient vaccine everywhere where there needs to be in Northland.
Supplementary, what advice has she received on the dire measles vaccine supply expressed in communications from Waikato DHB to health professionals yesterday?
Mr. Speaker, exactly as I just said, the Director General of Health has assured me there's no issue with supply, but the stock take revealed that it was not evenly distributed. And so there's active work going on right now to ensure that all of the vaccines are available where they need to be administered, and in particular, that we're ensuring that all children who are the most vulnerable to measles are able to receive all of their vaccines. In the last 2 weeks, thousands of vaccines have been administered each day, which is significantly more than average, and so that would probably explain why some GPs were low on stock. But we all of the orders have been filled in Northland, and I don't have the specifics on Waikato, but I can get them for him.
Supplementary, what does she say to 1.3 million New Zealanders aged between 30 to 50 who are no longer being targeted to receive the measles vaccine, and when did this recommendation change?
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Director General of Health announced to give clarity to PHOs. It was very important that we ensure that we maintain the childhood immunization schedule and that the most at-risk people are children. They are the most vulnerable to the disease, the most likely to be hospitalized. And although there's no shortage of vaccines, it does require staff and others. And so necessarily, because we can't administer vaccines to everyone in the country within a period of just a few short weeks, we are ensuring that no child is missing their vaccine and that all those who are most vulnerable are going to get their vaccine. But I assure the member there is no shortage of vaccines. We simply want to make sure that the most vulnerable people are not missing out, given that there's been unprecedented demand for vaccines in the past 2 weeks.
Supplementary, can you confirm the government will announce that pharmacists will be able to vaccinate for measles, as we have called on the government to urgently do back on 2nd of September?
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, could I ask that he repeat the beginning of the question? The member, I just missed the beginning.
The member only needs to do the first part of it because the other part was superfluous.
Can she confirm the government will announce that pharmacists will be able to vaccinate for measles?
Can the minister in this case?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can confirm that the government is actively and urgently exploring the opportunity for pharmacists to provide the MMR vaccine, but Unfortunately, contrary to the member's assertion, allowing pharmacists to vaccinate for MMR is not a 30-second policy. Funding, reimbursement, classification, record keeping all need to be considered, and we want this policy to be implemented safely.
Question number 9, Tumbity Coffee.
Kia Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
My question is to the Minister of Māori Development. How
is the government supporting the revitalisation of Te Reo Māori? The government is supporting with Māori strategies to increase fluency in the language, and we know that the language and history are going together. What are the recent advertisements that talk about? This is a long answer, but to support what has been said, we are developing the teachers in the following way. There are 700 new teachers in the districts. How do we include Māori in the classrooms, increasing the resources to assist families in using the Māori language at home and at school, doing away with the program will be launched in the north in 2020. This is a program that will help to establish Māori learning. There are many issues that we are, that the government is taking for the Māori language. Supplementary question. Is this for Māoris only, the strategy? No. This is for everybody. And the main goal is that the language be spoken and heard everywhere, in all places, for everybody.
Question number 10, Jonathan Young.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tēnā koe.
Thank you.
To the Minister of Energy and Resources, does she stand by all of her statements, policies and actions?
The Honourable Speaker, David Parker.
On behalf of the Minister, yes, in the context they were made and undertaken.
Does she accept the findings of the Interim Climate Change Commission that a government's policy of forcing the market into producing 100% renewable electricity will push up power prices for New Zealand families by an average of $300 a year?
Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that the transition that New Zealand is on to decarbonising electricity and our other parts of our fossil fuel system will result in lower energy costs to New Zealanders than would otherwise be the case.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. I just asked whether she would accept the findings of the Interim Climate Change Committee.
I think if the member listened really carefully to the end of the answer, he got a very direct answer.
When the Minister said yesterday she does not think elevated wholesale power prices will flow through to higher household prices, however, with wholesale prices 60% higher through all of this year compared to the same period of last year, are we seeing a structural change in the market that could build in these higher prices?
Mr. Speaker, we did see a spike in wholesale gas and electricity prices over the last year, caused by problems in gas infrastructure. Pity we didn't have a few more renewables at the time.
That's right.
I would note that the latest data shows that electricity prices at retail are now 1.6% higher than they were last year, which is lower than the rate of inflation. And that, as a consequence, the Electricity Retailers Association have put out a release today, I suspect after the member submitted his question, saying household power bills have hit a 10-year low.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. The member referred to a spike, whereas the question alluded to
a 60% increase average over the country for the last 8.5 months, which is not a spike.
Well, it depends on one's definition of spike. It's one hell of a spike, but it could be described as a peak.
Point of order, sir. The question was, in that context, whether we are seeing a structural change. And I don't think you addressed the question.
And if the member listened to the end of the reply, unless he's suggesting that the lowest prices for 10 years is a structural change, which I'm not sure that he was, I think the question was certainly not only addressed but answered.
So when she said yesterday that renewable electricity is the cheapest form of generation that will bring down electricity prices, when does she expect the price per unit to fall, knowing that today's announcement was not about the price per unit but New Zealanders using less electricity?
Well, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, the cheapest cost new increments to supply in New Zealand are wind power and geothermal power. Wind power in particular has decreased in cost over recent years and continues to go down. Gas prices go up.
Is the Minister aware of news reports that have come out from Georgetown, which moved to 100% renewable electricity in 2012, which increased the cost of electricity by $1,000 per household? And what will she do to ensure that doesn't occur here?
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I'm aware from talking to the former Minister of Energy in the last Labor government, David Parker, that at the time when the changes were made towards renewable electricity, there was a prediction made by the then opposition that this would increase electricity prices. We have seen since that has not been the case, and as I said, despite the increasing proportion of New Zealand's electricity that comes from electricity prices in the last period, are the lowest that they've been for a long time.
Tell us more about this Parker plan.
So if the Minister, who has said in the past that she won't die in the ditch over the 100% renewable electricity target, would she rather we use gas, which has decreased in its use this last year, or use coal, which has increased by 134%, to back up and support a largely renewable electricity system?
Mr. Speaker, neither. I'd rather see renewables used. I would also note that the problems that the member is referring to were actually problems in gas distribution. They weren't a shortage of gas. I'm advised that we have more than a decade of forward gas available to the New Zealand electricity market, and that's what the average has been for quite a long time.
Question number 11, Dr. Pamjit Pama.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Research, Science and Innovation. Does she stand by all of her statements, policies and actions?
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister for Research, Science and Innovation, yes. I particularly stand by our decision to make the largest ever investment in research and development through the $1 billion R&D tax incentive in Budget 2018 and the additional $132 million investment in science in Budget 2019. I'm also happy to remind the member that we've recently seen R&D spend increase from 1.23% to 1.37% of GDP.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. Is she aware that her own officials advised her that the government's policies in Budget 2019 do not reflect the funding needed to increase R&D expenditure to 2% of GDP?
Mr. Speaker, of course, on behalf of the Minister, I've received a range of advice on what it's going to take to reach the target of 2% of GDP in the 10-year period that the government has set. We, of course, do expect that the private sector is going to play a very large role in getting us to that point, and we are going to partner with them to achieve that. On this side of the House, we believe in an active role for the private sector around R&D, though, of course, I know with the newfound enthusiasm for communism on the other side of the House, they might be rethinking that.
No. That line has been consistently ruled out by speakers, and even in a humorous way, I'm going to be consistent with speakers from the past and say that that is not an approach that is going to be taken by either side of the House.
Should he withdraw? Yes, he should.
Draw.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. Does she think it's realistic to meet the government's own target when, according to MBIE, to reach the target, business expenditure on R&D needs to increase by 10% per annum, and government expenditure on R&D needs to increase by at least $150 million per annum, which she has failed to deliver?
Mr. Speaker, in answer to the first part of the question, yes. In answer to the second part of the question, I do refer the member to my earlier answer where I said that the private sector is going to have to play a significant role here. And I'm pleased to tell the member that we need a private sector increase of at least 10%, as the member has pointed out, and that in fact, between 2016 and 2018, it was 34%. So we're seeing larger increases than we need to in order to meet the target.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. Does she really think it's realistic to expect business expenditure on R&D to increase by 10% per annum when business confidence is at its lowest level since the global financial crisis?
Mr. Speaker, I think as the Minister of Finance has explained on many occasions before, we're more interested in what business are doing than what they're saying about how they feel, because those two things don't always correlate.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. If, as her own officials advise, her government appears unable to meet its own R&D target, will she do what she did with KiwiBuild and just get rid of the target?
Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that the government is going to meet the target.
Question number 12, Paul Eagle.
Tēnā koe te māngai.
Greetings, Mr. Speaker.
My question is to the Minister for Building and Construction. What recent report has the Minister seen on forecast construction activity?
The Honourable Jenny Sully, sir.
Mr. Speaker, may I first of all, as a Tongan, express my sincerest condolences in the passing of the Right Honourable Akilisi Pōhiva to his family and to all Tongans worldwide. Mr. Speaker, last week I released the 2019 National Construction Pipeline Report that forecasts strong and sustainable construction activity for at least the next 5 years. The report shows the value that construction activity expected to hit $43.5 billion at its peak. This represents significant activity across residential, non-residential and infrastructure construction sectors. Given the construction sector represents our fourth largest employer and our fifth largest industry by GDP, this is further proof that our government policies and work in the construction sector are indeed hitting the nail on the head.
Supplementary. How does forecasting construction activity help the construction industry?
Mr. Speaker, one of the key concerns I hear frequently from industry through the construction sector record is about managing the boom-bust cycles that negatively impact productivity, innovation and employment in the construction sector. The positive forecast highlighted in the 2019 National Construction Pipeline Report provides certainty to the construction industry and means government and industry can work together to support better planning, better scheduling of investment and better coordination of construction procurement.
How does this forecast construction activity align with other measures?
Mr. Speaker, this report is just one indication that the construction sector is performing to support jobs and deliver houses, schools and hospitals that are essential to all of our well-being. Last month, Stats New Zealand reported that there were almost 36,000 houses consented for the year to the year end of July, including 14,000 in Auckland and 4,000 in the Waikato. This rate has not been seen since February of 1974 and further demonstrates the strength of the construction sector.
That concludes oral questions.